Welcome to yet another installment of something that nobody else can get you except the podcast party. And it is here, and it is with the great Jean-Jacques Cornish, who will be joining us this morning from Pretoria to tell us all about what's going on in Africanalysis, brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. JJ, it's always nice to see you. There's no shortage of news this week. I'm very, very pleased that so many African countries are doing so well at the Olympics. But of course, it isn't your job to bring us lovely, happy stories like that every week. You try. what's going on? First of all, are you doing well? Are you busy?
Yes, I'm very busy. I'm trying to finish a book, man, and so I'm exceedingly busy.
Well, that's good. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Let's start off, and you can always tell me if you don't want to start there, with Western Sahara, Morocco, the French influence going on there. President Emmanuel Macron has recognized Moroccan autonomy over the Western Sahara. This is probably not such good news for the people of the Western Sahara, right?
Not at all. And if you see the response from France, from the parties, the socialists, the communists, the Greens, all sorts of parties to his left, not such good news for them too. If you see the European Union, Jacques Borrell, if you see the United Nations, not such good news for them either. This is something that has been running since 1975. Now, it has to be said that France has always under the table supported Morocco, but never dared to go so far. And how could Macron do it now when he doesn't even have a government? You know, when you take such a monumental step, you normally have to pass it through the various chains of government. But in this case, he doesn't even have one. So he's gone with it. And it's very, what we have is Abdelmadjid Bouhoud, the president of Algeria, furious about it. He's withdrawn his ambassador, and Algeria has said, That's only the first step. There will be further steps. So it really is something that his predecessor, Jacques Chirac, who was great mates with Mohammed VI, M6, as we like to call him, used to call him Tonton, you know, his uncle. He never dared go so far. Now, the Spaniards have come and done something similar, but not to the extent of Chirac, of Macron saying this plan of Morocco's, which is to 2007, is the only one that can work. The United Nations point out that there are United Nations Security Council resolutions. The European Union says we're not changing our position. We're not recognizing Morocco's sovereignty over the Western Sahara. So it's an ugly business. And just in the last day, I've been reading a report by a very influential Spanish journalist, that's more important than diplomats, us journalists, you know. He was saying that France is about to sell a TGV, a train de grande vitesse, you know, a high-speed rail to Morocco. And that's having something to do with it. There's going to be a fat commission to pay. They're charging way, way, way more than other European competitors. And so it's very interesting to see what is in fact motivating the moves by France, by Spain. You know, this puts France in a bracket with Eswatini, El Salvador, and Equatorial Guinea. You know, that's where
that's
they are.
It's a very good company to keep.
The one superpower, the pen holder on issues African, is playing in those leagues now. So it's very interesting. The Spaniards, the parties absolutely revolted against what the Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez did. And believe it or not, Sanchez's wife is now in court on charges of having taken money in Morocco. So who knows? You know, this could be, this is sort of the politics of acquisition or the politics of diplomacy. You know, we wonder about it. It's something, a story that we're going to have to look at very, very carefully. But you can imagine that the Sahrawi are furious about it.
Do you think there's any chance that because of the Olympics and the world being distracted, this is exactly the right time for something like this to happen and for Macron to use the fact that people are distracted as the opportunity to cozy up to the Moroccans and give them what he's been promising them for the longest time?
Well, I don't know if he has been promising it. You know, what he did was at the G7 last month, he told the Algerian president that he was going to do it. It's been a closely guarded secret. And I think the Algerians were pushing hard to have him stay his hand on this. You know, he'd fallen foul, or France had fallen foul of Morocco for not supporting them on a lot of things. The Spanish, we understand, made their deal, so to speak, softer deal with Morocco in order to stop the illegal migrants. More and more illegal migrants are getting to Spain from Africa to the Canary Islands. So they're trying to do that, control that. There's no such motivation with the French. Only thing is financial. And if they can be selling a high-speed train to Morocco, maybe that's what they want. But they've been at pains, and Macron especially, pains to improve relations with Algeria. They fought this bitter war of independence. Not a single family went untouched, the Algerians will tell you. 2 million died in it. It was really a shocker. And then Macron admitted that the French had tortured people during this war. He apologized for it. But now all the good work they've done on Tounadring, on getting back close to Morocco, is up in the air, I'm afraid.
Well, you know what they always say, there's no such thing as a war that isn't a trade war in some way, shape, or form. So, okay, moving along from that, the Democratic Republic of Congo has apparently come up with a deal with Rwanda over stopping what has been going on. How long has it been going on now?
The real fierce fighting now for 2.5 years, and that is between the rebels, the forces for the liberation of the DRC, the Hutus, in fact, who fled, the genocidaires who fled after perpetrating the genocide against the Tutsis, fled into the Congo. And that's always created a real problem between Rwanda and the Congo. And then M23, the movement that was left out of a deal and formed this movement, and then they stopped, but 2.5 years ago resumed with great force their fight against the government. They happen to be Tutsis. And that is why Rwanda is supporting them. Now, you know, you can't say this in Rwanda. You can't ask somebody's genetic background in Rwanda, because, you know, you're not allowed to talk about it. But it's a reality. This is the Hutu-Tutsi struggle being fought in the neighboring DRC. Now, the United States brought in a humanitarian truce that elapsed on the 3rd of August. That's just a few days ago. And suddenly this peace deal between Rwanda and the DRC was announced, but there are elements within the M23, they're a dirty lot, who are still firing and fighting and saying that this peace agreement doesn't affect them. Now, they've never had a peace agreement that's lasted more than a few weeks, so we wait with bated breath to see what can happen. But certainly, you know, who's been involved? Kenya, Uganda, in this case also, the United States, all trying to mediate. SADC had forces in trying to stop the M23, but they failed and they were asked to leave. So it's a hell of a mishmash. And this is the country at the very heart of Africa, 11 neighbors. If the Congo worked and could produce the food and the minerals and the power, the hydroelectric power, they could make the continent of Africa work. So we really do pray that something comes of this peace deal.
Yeah, I, from your mouth to God's ears and to whoever is in power in various places that needs to make this happen. And it's sad. I hadn't realized until you told me now that secretly this Tutsi-Hutu war carries on, something which was so ugly and resulted in that disgusting genocide in the 90s. I thought we were over it, but clearly not.
No, certainly not.
Sure. All right, let's look at Nigeria. I mean, I'm quite interested in all these protests that are breaking out. You and I discussed in a previous episode of African Analysis the tax protests that that were brought about in Kenya.
Well, and that's what started. Sorry.
No.
It started as tax and then moved on to other things. And then last week, I don't know, I was talking about it with someone and talking about the fact that the Ugandans had come in too. And they also were worrying about tax. sudden, and the Nigerians at that point turned to their young people and said, don't you dare try that stuff here. Next thing you know, the young Nigerians were on the street and they were protesting against the cost of living rise. And there's been a huge inflation in food prices. People are going hungry. They simply can't afford to buy enough food. And that is what they're complaining about. They've taken to the streets. And these young people, well, I mean, we were young ourselves. I can remember at the time, the last time they had a fractious Democratic convention, you know, in Chicago. I was one of that generation that believed we could change the world. And nothing would have kept me off the streets if I wanted to protest. And that is what is happening in Kenya, in Uganda, in Nigeria. And is it going to spread? Is this going to be the new African dawn? Is this going to be the new African revolution? They're saying that nothing will stop them. And at least 13 have been killed. The Nigerians don't fool around when it comes to law and order, using sharp point ammunition, using tear gas. Now, the president stood up, Bola Tinubu stood up or went on television last night saying, this is what we've done. And he's laid out all the economic successes of his relatively short presidency. Stop this. Get off the streets. Let's talk. But, you know, that's what the Kenyan prime minister did, too. Or Kenyan president, and look what it ended with him. The demonstrators said, yes, let's talk, but you've got to go. And is that going to happen in the other African countries? This is something we've got to watch with enormous interest.
Well, we will, and I'm glad that we've got you able to pay attention to these things. You mentioned that they're also young people, but I mean, we're talking probably about Gen X here in all three countries that you mentioned, Kenya, Uganda and Nigeria. So is it an age thing as well? These are the people who have working age. These are the people who've probably put in a few years of work already.
No, younger, a bit younger than that. Many of them younger than that. And have said our parents, and this is how the Kenyans put it, our parents have been taxed to the wazoo, and it's just not fair. And we've seen them now growing old and growing exhausted, and they're just not getting anything for their tax. And then suddenly the finance bill, the budget that they were bringing in, had new taxes, and then the government relented on those and threw away the finance bill and then sacked most of the cabinet and, you know, made enormous steps. I suppose there's that argument about, you know, you give them the finger and they'll take the hand when you're under pressure. But that's what's happened. Kenya has been sort of been the most dramatic of these. But in terms of the number of lives lost, I don't know how Tinubu is going to get the people to stop protesting now. Because once you mow people down who are demonstrating, you know that you're going to have a protracted problem.
Well, I hope that they sort that out too. And I don't mean with violence. I mean, I hope that there are accommodations made for people who, to my mind, and the way you've explained it, they seem like they have legitimate gripes with their governments.
Well, in each case, in every case, and certainly by making concessions, though, you know, the government has to accept that it's been wrong. And then of course, the young people come back and say, well, that's it. Now we want you to pay for being wrong. You've got to leave office. And, you know, it's an intractable problem.
JJ, thank you very much for your time. It's always lovely to catch up with you and for your insights into what's going on in the DRC, in Nigeria, and in Morocco and the Western Sahara. I'm sure that we'll have even more from you in the next 2 weeks. Stick around for more African analysis. It's all brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School right here on The Podcast Party.